I am here at the Greek Democratic Hall on the main floor where I am fortunate to have bumped into Sima Ibbotson, and I've been meaning to talk with her about what she had to endure at the G20 protests, because she was protesting there.
She was arrested on charges of obstruction of a police officer and unlawful assembly.
Can you share with us your story?
Of course. I had the unfortunate luck to be beaten, detained, and charged during the G20 riots in Toronto. I was protesting legally in Queen's Park, the legal protest zone, or so we thought, and without warning or due cause.
Myself, along with a lot of other comrades, were beaten, cornered, and detained. I spent 26 hours in detention. There, I endured some pretty violating things.
When did this start? When did you get arrested? On the Friday, Saturday, or Sunday?
I was arrested on Saturday at approximately 6:30. I had been a part of the march through the city with the Young Communist League and the Communist Party of Canada earlier on in the day. I was not with any comrades when I was arrested and detained. I wasn't flying a banner at all. I was just literally just hanging out with other activists, just in the park, you know, talking to people, networking, finding out why other activists were there and the causes that they were standing up for, and realizing that, you know, I can relate to a lot of people from different areas of political activism. So yeah, I was there just sort of networking and conversating with other comrades. And without warning and due cause, I was tackled, literally, and detained. And in there, I experienced the detention center at Haven Eastern, which was a makeshift detention cell. They were old film studios that the government had converted to holding cells for activists. And there we were processed very slowly. And yeah, and I mean, to be honest though, on a little bit of a side note, I feel like it might sound really weird, but in a way, I feel like I'm really lucky to have experienced something like this. I feel like it was better me than somebody who was a little bit less prepared to deal with the repercussions of living in a police state. I feel like I have the tools, I have the comrades, I have the support necessary to carry on and to follow through on my charges and on the class action lawsuit and also my civil case against the police, the Toronto PD, the RCMP. To be honest, I actually don't know who my arresting officers were yet. Still in the process of getting all the paperwork together, but I feel like I've got the tools to further my cause.
When you had been arrested, you weren't doing anything visibly that would provoke the police to arrest you. It's really scary.
Yeah, like I said, you know, as part of the march earlier on in the day, a bunch of different kinds of activists were gathering in Queen's Park because it was the legal protest zone. There was some beautiful color going on. I mean, there was music, there was people just sitting in the grass talking about various causes. There were banners everywhere. There were food being given out. And it was a really fantastic environment to be in. I don't know why anybody who had the chance wouldn't want to be there to connect with these activists from all around the country and possibly all around the world, depending on who you talk to. Yeah, I wasn't doing a damn thing. I would take credit for it if I was, but I really wasn't. I was standing, talking to other activists, and without warning, we were stormed by these things that can only really be described as stormtroopers. You know, we were joking, saying they all looked like stormtroopers, but they really did. I mean, they were all carbon copies of one another, not only in physical appearance, but in behavior and treatment of activists and comrades all around.
Wow, that's really scary that they just target anyone who's in opposition.
I think they actually targeted me specifically because I was facilitating conversation. And I was, you know, less than 10 feet away from these officers. I was actually, at one point, I was trying to appeal to this person, this woman that I saw in riot gear, saying, "Sister, you know, do you realize that you are working with the people that oppressed us for years?" This officer specifically was, I suppose, of possibly African or Caribbean Canadian descent. So, you know, part of what the capitalists call a visible minority. You know, somebody that I'm sure at points in her life has experienced racial discrimination and sexual discrimination. You know, seeing this woman behind the same mask as a white chauvinistic male pig right next to her. It was really disheartening for me to see that. So I was appealing to this woman to say, you know, look, do you realize what you're doing? I don't think you do. I think you've been brainwashed by the capitalist male system that's in place. And I want you to see and I want you to understand what you're doing. I wasn't being confrontational, I was being conversational. But of course, you know, they didn't respond. And there was a lot of other comrades next to me doing the same thing. And then, you know, we would chant every once in a while. And I think that what they did was pick out the people who they saw as educated and who they saw as organized.
There's possibly influential.
Yeah, and possibly influential for sure. That saw these people as, oh, you know, this person kind of knows, like, they obviously know, like, she sounds like she knows what she's talking about. You know, let's arrest this person, let's brutalize this person, let's violate this person's freedom, because they're a part of what the capitalists consider a problem.
Could you expand on what your experience in the, what do they call them? Cages?
Cages, detention center?
Yeah.
Well, I was detained for 26 hours. From 6:30 on Saturday till about, I don't know, I think it was about 11:30, 12 Sunday night. I was kept in the detention center at Pavement Eastern until approximately 12 to 2 o'clock. We were unaware of the time. No one would tell us. And of course, everybody had been strip searched at this point, so no one had a watch or a cell phone or anything like that. The only way of really recognizing time would be to scream out and hope that maybe someone in another cage had a view of one of their clocks, and who knows if they were right.
So you were strip searched?
Yeah, I was. I was detained for I think approximately 15 to 16 hours, only being through the generic search. I had nothing on me but my clothes and my jewelry and my facial jewelry. And yeah, it was level 3 search, I think they called it. So yes, I was strip searched, as in I'm standing there naked in front of officers.
What reason did they have?
They don't have a reason. I guess it's just a demoralizing tactic.
Yes,
I would better call it demoralizing, because it's so degrading.
Right.
And especially, you know, as a woman, I had female comrades in there that were, you know, menstruating, and they were denied certain products for their comfort and their hygiene. Yeah, it was pretty insane. I waited 14 hours for a phone call. I waited 13 hours for water, and when it was given, it was approximately 2 ounces in a Dixie cup. I mean, seriously, it doesn't quench your thirst, especially after being kept in these cells that are dusty and dirty. They're not, you know, jails are cleaner, you know? Prisoners in the system, I would imagine, probably have better conditions than we had. I've never been in a concentration camp. I've never experienced that, but I would imagine that it was similar to a modern-day equivalent. Especially the way that they were treating us like cattle. Voiceless, numberless, rightless, inhuman things.
Yeah, and cattle should never treat that way.
No! I can honestly say I never once fathomed that I would ever experience what I experienced as a Canadian citizen. I mean, I know there's a lot wrong with our system, but I never thought that we would revert to Guantanamo Bay-style actions.
Do you think people were targeted as well in these cells, just in a similar way? That do you think that you were targeted and arrested because of?
Yeah, I do think people were certainly targeted. I think that the people
with certain treatment.
Yeah, with you know, you can tell when you're in your situation like that. You can tell who's educated. You can tell who's, I mean, I don't say educated as intelligent, I just mean educated about causes. There were a lot of people detained who truly did not belong there. They were literally just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Children, you know, kids out for a night on the town. It was
How
a Saturday
were
night.
Children?
There were people 17, 18 years old who are minors. I don't know whether it was a lack in the system. I don't know what happened. Maybe they didn't have ID on them, so therefore the cops just had no way of verifying their ages. I really don't know. I'm not justifying it at all, but yeah, there were certainly people there that were not part of the protesting. There were people there that were not part of any action of any kind. I feel like I was discriminated against. Like I said, I was strip searched. All of my tattoos, I am pretty heavily tattooed. They were all books and all taken pictured of. And I have, you know, a pretty obvious tattoo on my leg of a red star and a black fist that I proudly wear. Very proudly wear. But because I was strip searched and all my tattoos were booked, obviously they knew that. Oh, and I will also note that there's a peace sign on the other side of my leg. They certainly targeted the people that they knew to be socialists and communists.
And so you were let go. Can you talk about that process and what was the outcome of the whole arrest?
Well, yeah, we were shipped to the courts in Etobicoke, the court holding cells, and we were kept completely in the dark about what was happening to us, where we were going, what was going on. No one, you know, I met with a lawyer once briefly who really didn't have a lot of information. I mean, God, the poor woman is probably dealing with hundreds of people that also don't know what they're doing or what's going on or why they're there. So, you know, I met with the lawyer once. I was still very unclear about what my charges were until I was taken to the courthouse, and a lawyer met with me briefly right before my bail hearing and told me what my charges were, which are, by the way, obstructing an officer and unlawful assembly. So going through the procedures there, we were detained for a few more hours in similar conditions. Food was given. Of course, it was nothing that I could eat, being vegan and gluten intolerant. It wasn't exactly something I could eat. I made it very clear that I would be physically sick if I ate what this food, like, seriously, man, give me a fucking granola bar, you know? Yeah, so after going through all that, you know, I went to my bail hearing in socks, of course. They couldn't give us our shoes back. You know, I couldn't even look that decent in front of a judge. And, yeah, I was let go in the pouring rain on 11:30, 12 o'clock at night in Etobicoke with no way of getting home, no money. Thank God, there were comrades waiting on the side to help the people that had been released and had no idea where they were. There's a lot of out-of-province comrades who had been separated from their groups. So it was a bit, you know, it was havoc through the entire thing. And to be honest, none of the officers of the court martials had any idea what was really going on. They were all extremely verbally abusive. The males in the courthouse were, like, to be honest, I don't really want to repeat what they said to us.
Yeah. Because there's some restrictions?
No, it's just that it's really hard for me to reiterate. Oh, okay. You know, it's just like, yeah.
It has been traumatic.
Extremely. And I've talked to, extremely traumatic. I've talked to a lot of comrades that, you know, and especially, like I said, female comrades. And I mean, I'm not differentiating between the experiences of our male comrades as well, but I think that there was a lot of mistakes made on the part, I mean, that's an understatement, a lot of mistakes made on the behalf of the system.
A lot of them
were
intentional.
A lot of them were intentional.
As you said, meant to demoralize mm-hmm. people.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I encountered a number of officers, as well as female officers, who you could very obviously tell their sole intent of a remark or of an action was to demoralize the captives. It was to break down camaraderie if they saw two people connecting and getting close and being able to connect with one another. They would separate you into two different cells. At one point late on in the detention center, I was transferred to another cell with another female comrade from Vancouver, and she had been alone for 16 hours in the cell with no view of any other person. All she had was, you know, the screens and being able to talk to people in the cell next to her. So it was good that at least I wasn't kept alone.
And I was listening to your story when you were talking earlier mm-hmm. to a crowd of people, and you were saying that one statement that was said to you by Pop is, you know, guarantee that no one will be there, you'll be, what was the thing?
This was right back when I was being detained at Queen's right. Park, right at the beginning of my experience. When I was being stood on, literally stood on, I wish I was exaggerating. When he leaned down next to my ear so I could feel his breath on my ear and said to me, "It's okay, we're taking you somewhere with no cameras." And I can honestly say that the panic that went through me was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. And I've been involved with activism for many years now in many different capacities. And when you are literally under the boot of someone that does not care about your safety, that does not care about your health, that does not care about your rights, I think that it's very shocking for somebody, and I'll say it, I've been sheltered, I'm a Canadian youth. We don't deal with a lot of these very real dangers that a lot of people and brothers and sisters around the world deal with on an everyday basis. So, you know, in a sense, I would say I was unprepared for a threat on my safety, emotionally and physically.
And so the charges were dropped in the end. So no apology. What has happened with that?
Well, moving forward, what I'm doing now, or what happened, initially I was offered the charges to be dropped if I signed a piece of paper recognizing responsibility, taking responsibility. Of course, I did not, because I did nothing wrong. I'm not taking responsibility for anything I didn't do. And many comrades were faced with that, and thank God none of them signed it. at least as far as I'm aware. So I did not sign that, and my fantastic lawyer went back to the Crown and appealed, and essentially my charges were dropped with a, get this, a $25 donation to a charity of my choice.
Wow.
Which, it's just a joke, it's a bureaucratic joke, so went right back into the legal defense fund.
Great, yeah. Wow.
Now, I took a little bit of time to just sort of recover physically and get on the road to recovering emotionally. I mean, it's something that I don't think I'll ever fully get over. And I think a lot of comrades will carry this with them for their entire lives. Moving forward, I think I'm going to be involved with the class action lawsuit. I'm sort of getting back on the bandwagon now and, you know, starting to network and finding a good civil defense lawyer. And I'm going to start my process of pressing charges against the police.
And when were the charges dropped against you?
The charges were dropped on August 23rd, the mass court date for all of the activists. I actually flew out from Vancouver for it. I mean, my lawyer actually said, you know, you don't have to worry about coming. No, you know what, I do, because I got to stare him in the face. Whether it makes a difference to them or not, it makes a difference to me.
Good for you.
Yeah, like,
gestures
was,
are very powerful.
Yeah, and thank God for my amazing parents who bought me my plane ticket. I feel very grateful that I've had the support of comrades and family and friends from all over the world in this struggle. And, you know, even though my charges were dropped, I know that there's the very real threat for a lot of my other comrades that are still in jail, that are still on house arrest, that are still facing pending charges. So I'm going to involve myself as much as I possibly can in helping those comrades with their trials and tribulations, as well as forwarding my civil action suit.
Do you know the G20 legal Gmail where people can donate?
You know what, I don't, but you know what, you search it, it's probably the first thing that comes up. Donate to the Legal Defense Fund. These people really need your help. There's a lot of financial burdens that have been placed on a lot of people. I mean, thousands and thousands of dollars for lawyers' fees, for bail. There's a very real need for youth and progressive thinking individuals to become involved in this. This is something that does not only affect the 1,300 people that were arrested or the 247 people that were charged with similar charges, as well as the 18 people that are charged with conspiracy. This does not just affect the small number of people. This affects every person, not only as a Canadian citizen, but as a human being. Our rights were taken away as human beings by the Canadian government. So don't think you're safe because you live in Canada. Don't think that our government is any better than any other unmentionable capitalist regimes in the world. We are just as bad as they are, and we need to fight within our system as human beings. It crosses political lines, a situation like this. It really does. Everyone needs to be involved in this because it's our problem too. It's our children's problem, and if we don't deal with it now, someone else will. So get involved.
That's great. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.